This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton. The real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, 96.5 The Fan, Jay Binkley, Logan Weber, Drew Nixon. We just discussed gorillas fighting people. Now we'll talk about the Chiefs fighting other NFL teams.
That seems like a more reasonable use of our time.
The schedule comes out next week, the 14th to be exact. Chiefs this year play at Buffalo, at Dallas. Keep that game in mind for a Thanksgiving Day game. Wouldn't that be fun? Chiefs and Cowboys on Thanksgiving. Get the night and give them Christmas.
I'd love that.
Well, Chiefs were on the very first night game on Thanksgiving when they played the Broncos. Kind of a tribute to Lamar Hunt that year. Because normally, you know, every year it's the Cowboys and the Lions on Thanksgiving. So they rotate that night game around, which is good for the NFL. At Denver, at Jacksonville, Denver at home, Chargers at home, Raiders at home, of course. Houston at home, Indy, Eagles at home. That'll be fun. Washington at home. Baltimore at home, Detroit at Vegas, at the Chargers, at the Giants, at the Titans. I got a text saying they went to the Raiders game last year. A friend of mine did, and they loved it. The old Death Star out in Vegas.
Allegiant Stadium.
It's not quite the home field advantage I think they were hoping for originally in Vegas. Clearly, it's a transient city.
Yeah, it's a tourist town.
But the Golden Knights have worked out. I mean, the fans of that have worked out. You would think, okay, everybody wants to come see their hockey team play when they're in Vegas. It's actually worked out with homegrown fans, and I think the Raiders were hoping for that buzz as well, but it hadn't happened.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it has to do with you're not winning. If you've got a winning product, people are going to want to go see that. I mean, the Vegas Golden Knights, to have the immediate success that they had in the NHL, said, hey, that team's winning. We want to go watch winning, so we're going to go watch. The Raiders haven't exhibited that in Las Vegas yet. If they start to win and they start to get competitive, they become a perennial playoff team. The people of Las Vegas, just like anywhere else, are going to show up to watch that team play. That's
what the A's are
open
for whenever they eventually get to Vegas. I'm surprised the NBA's not there, to be honest with you. I thought that was going to be the first pros franchise in the city.
They will eventually once they get to the next set of expansion teams, which they have been discussing for several years. Or
with the summer league, though, I'm just surprised it was just a natural fix.
When the Kings decide that they want to leave again, this time leave Sacramento, then they may end up in Vegas. Makes sense, because that's where the A's are playing right now, is Sacramento, and then they're going to go to Vegas next year, so why not just follow suit?
Well, Sharp Football put out his toughest list for the toughest schedules next year, which I don't really care about. It's 49ers, Patriots, Saints, Falcons, and Bills. For what teams are projected for win totals and teams that are on the schedule, they put this out. I don't really care, because I think the AFC West, toughest schedule in the AFC. You have three playoff teams in there. You got these coaches that have won. Even the Raiders, they didn't make the one team that from the AFC West that didn't make the playoffs has a Super Bowl winning head coach that's 72 years old and on a desire to keep winning.
Yeah, I'm kind of baffled by this list. The Chiefs' 27th toughest schedule,
which is insane.
Yeah, they
considering some of those teams I mentioned, that they, like the Eagles, Bills, the Ravens, Lions.
I guess I shouldn't say 27th toughest schedule. By this list, they have the 6th hardest schedule in the league. 27th, if you're ranking 1 through 32, easiest to hardest. So it's the 6th most difficult schedule in football. But I look at the Vikings at 28. You've got the Eagles at 29. Lions at 30. The Browns at 31, and the Giants at number 32. The Chiefs are playing 10 games against playoff teams from a year ago, which, again, take it with a grain of salt, because you looked at their schedule last year, and I don't know anybody who looked at it.
There's always the team that makes the playoffs that didn't make the playoffs the year before.
Yeah, who looked at the Washington Commanders and thought, oh, that's going to be a tough game. Well, Turns out it was. They won 12 games a season ago. So I am a little bit surprised that they're not closer to maybe the second or third toughest schedule in the league. But I think that there are some things that certainly help them. Of the 10 teams, the 10 games I just mentioned against playoff teams, they have home games against seven of them. They've got the Broncos at home, Chargers at home, obviously being inside the division. They host the Baltimore Ravens. They host the Detroit Lions. They host the Houston Texans, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Washington Commanders. All of them are at home. The only road games they have, Broncos, Chargers on the road, obviously. You've got the Bills on the road, but then you go to Dallas, to Jacksonville, to New York for the Giants, and to Tennessee to play the Titans. Your road schedule is very, very friendly.
And the only thing I really look at is I look at the quarterback situation. Like, that's the first thing that sticks out to me. Which quarterbacks are very good that you're playing on the road?
Yeah.
Like, who are those quarterbacks? Now, obviously, you're playing Josh Allen in Buffalo. I get it. They usually beat the Chiefs in the regular season. Postseason, much different story. It's kind of a who cares game for me. I don't really care about it. Just like when they lost to Buffalo this year, I was like, who cares? Wait till we get to the postseason, see if they beat them. But you look at a lot of these games, you think, all right, which quarterback are they playing? There's some really, really good quarterbacks that they play in the NFL this year.
No question.
You got Jackson on there, Lamar Jackson. You got Josh Allen. You've got Jaden Daniels on there. You got Jalen Hurts again on there. They play a lot of good quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at a top 10 list of the best quarterbacks in football, there's only maybe two that you won't see next year. You won't see Baker Mayfield, and you won't see Joe Burrow. But you,
Joe Scheisty.
Yep, Joe Scheisty. You have matchups against Lamar. You've got a matchup against Jared Goff and C.J. Stroud and Bo Nix twice.
And Justin the Giants, Herbert whoever twice. That's going to be.
Whoever maybe that ends up being. You've got to play Jaden Daniels. You've got to play against Josh Allen. You've got to play against Dak Prescott coming back off the injury. What does that look like? You've got to play against Trevor Lawrence with nobody to throw the football to outside of maybe a two-way player in Travis Hunter.
Travis Hunter, man.
And you got to play the number one overall pick at his home stadium in Cam Ward with the Tennessee Titans. So it's an interesting schedule, but I look at it and, man, I would love a Thanksgiving Day game in Dallas against the Cowboys, right? That's a road game for you. The Cowboys always host on Thanksgiving. I think that's picture perfect scheduling for the NFL. Put the problem.
The Chiefs are their bell cow. And you put two of America's teams together.
Maybe the two most popular teams in football in 2025. That game's going to explode for people, right? You can play the whole, you know, Dallas Texans versus, you know, you can play that whole scheme with the Thanksgiving Day game. I think it works. I know that there's some people that think that Chiefs Eagles is going to be the NFL's opening day game. I don't see it because the Chiefs are the home team.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
The Eagles are going to host their for their week one game. They're the defending Super Bowl champions. That's traditionally been the way they've done it a lot of the time.
They'll host
is that the Super Bowl team, whoever wins the Super Bowl is going to be the host of that game. I think the Eagles will host the first game of the year on Thursday night, and it won't be against the Kansas City Chiefs.
They should do the Commanders game, but whatever.
They should, but I'm fascinated by how difficult this schedule can be for the Kansas City Chiefs. Man, if there's one thing I'm hoping for this Chiefs schedule, it's that it's not overly backloaded. Like, the last thing I want to see is in the final 5 weeks of the year, the Chiefs have to play a combination of like Philly, Washington, Detroit, and Buffalo.
And the total rest thing is big. Like, how much rest do you have between games?
Yes, and that's the Thursday second night, thing.
Which they do. Sharp Football always puts it out.
Yep.
Because a couple years ago, the Chiefs had less rest than anybody. This past year, it's the 49ers.
Yes. And that the second thing I would say is you have to hope for a halfway point or later bye week. I don't want to see this Chiefs team have a bye in week 6 or week 7. You hope that you're getting a week 11 or a week 13 bye if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, because you're going to be in the midst of a playoff
before
chance.
A tough opponent.
Yes.
And not a bye before the Jaguars.
Or in between, right? You've got Philly at home, bye week, and then you're playing Buffalo on the road. That's an ideal situation. The last thing you need is Tennessee on the road, bye week, and then you're hosting the Indianapolis Colts.
Or a couple years ago when Buffalo actually played in London and turned around and went ahead and took their bye week then instead of later on in the season, instead of right after London.
Yeah. Yeah. And it'll
because of Kansas City.
It'll be interesting. I'm curious if the Chiefs end up with... I don't think they'll end up with another international game this year. Obviously, they're not a host team for it. I don't think that they would play another international game.
I think it could end up Brazil.
Man.
Against the Chargers, which that'd be fine. It's not in LA. They dominate in there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Chiefs and Chargers in Brazil. Before that, you think that'll happen there, Drew?
Well, I think that because we talked about this when the opponents were first released, and I think that they're going to have a division game in the first week of the season. I just don't know who. I Chargers is the one that I lean towards, but because the Chiefs haven't had a division opener in a while. I don't know if it's been 10 years exactly or not, but I think we looked it up, and it's been a while since they opened up with a divisional opponent. So I wouldn't be surprised if they open, whether it be in Brazil or not. I think a divisional opponent is definitely in the cards.
Well, they'll have their share of Sunday Night Football. They'll have their share of Monday Night Football.
Always.
Playing noon games has kind of been out of the question. Noon home games out of the question.
That Tennessee game screams noon game.
The funny thing is like, let's look at like seven of the last 10 teams that were top three spenders in free agency didn't make the postseason the year before.
Mm.
Like the biggest free agent spender last year was Carolina, actually. And I think look how bad they were. They got better, but they were still bad.
Carolina might be an interesting team to follow this year. Just in regards to...
Because of T-Mac?
No, I mean, sure. But just in regards to the way Bryce Young looked at the end of the year, the NFC East is wide open... Or the NFC South is wide open. I mean, the Saints, I don't think anybody thinks is going to take anything. You know, they're not going to be serious.
You're not a Tyler Shutt guy?
No. The Falcons have Penix. We'll see how he does. Roster-wise, they're right there with... They might be the best roster in the division. I mean, with Tampa.
Top to bottom. Yeah, Tampa's there. Tampa's great. Tampa's aging.
They've won the division, what, four straight years?
Something like that, yeah.
I think Carolina might be able to make some noise in regards to the division race, maybe. I don't know if they make the playoffs, but...
I think it's the second longest streak Tampa has winning the division.
Because what did the division win last year? Was it 10 games, Bink, or was it 9?
Yeah, Buccaneers went 10-7, I believe.
And the year before it was 9-8, right, I think?
Yes. Okay. I mean, it's been a bad division.
Yeah, it's one of those where if you win 9 games,
but they've won four straight, but they were 13-4, 8-9, 9-8, then 10-7.
They were 8-9 and won the division?
They won the division 8-9. Lost the wild card against the Cowboys.
And the Saints won the division most recently beyond that, which was 2020. I believe that might have been Drew Brees' last year.
They won four straight.
Yeah. It's a bad division. All in all, it's a bad division. And it was a really good division there for a little while. Right? When you had Carolina at the height of Cam Newton and his powers, along with a really good Falcons team with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, the Saints were always consistently good with Drew Brees, and that division has fallen completely off the cliff ever since. I don't know. This division...
I still with the teams when the schedule comes out. I still do that.
I still do
W&Ls.
Okay. I like it. I mean, who doesn't, right?
It's just the Chiefs, right? Or do you go through every single team?
No, just Chiefs.
Okay. Well, yeah, like your first reaction record?
It would take forever.
I think it'll be 12-5. Yeah, I get it. I think that's everybody's first move.
Yeah, because then you got to think, which are the teams that can actually beat them?
Yeah, right. Of course.
Yeah, and it's hard to do it now. I mean, you know who they're playing, but you don't know the order in which they're playing, right?
Yeah.
Like, or how much rest in between, which I think is big.
Exactly. You look at it straight up, and you're like, okay, yeah, the Chiefs are capable of winning all 17 of these games. I'll say they go 14-3. And then the schedule comes out, and you're like, wait, they play the Ravens on a Thursday night, and then they play... They play the Commanders on Sunday late afternoon, and then they follow that up with a Monday night game the next week against Detroit. And you're like, do you really see them winning three straight games against those three teams? Probably not. So your thought process changes a little bit once you see the order of events, when they play, what time they play, how little rest, how much rest they end up getting, where the bye week sits, who's going to be healthy, who's not. It changes everything.
So which road game would you recommend for Chiefs fans?
To go to?
To go to. Raiders, obviously. That's an easy one. Vegas is fun.
Yeah, Vegas is fun.
But Tennessee, I think it'd be a lot of fun, too.
I've been to
the river. You can take the booze cruise and breakfast. You go around the river.
I've been to Nashville. I've been, you know, I've seen their stadium there in Tennessee.
Buffalo would be fun.
Buffalo would be a good one, depending on what time of year it is, right? If it's December, God, no, don't go to Buffalo. If it's September, okay, maybe you can consider
still
it.
One more year in the old stadium.
AT&T is a really impressive facility outside of the stupid design of having those windows there where the sun just shines in on the stadium in the middle of a game. It's a really impressive stadium, I will say. So if you haven't been to Dallas, you haven't seen Jerry World AT&T there in, I guess it's in Arlington, technically, not in Dallas. But that's a really cool facility to go to.
I would say Denver, but I think, honestly, they have the most annoying fans in the NFL, even more than the Bengals.
Wow.
More
than the Cowboys?
Yeah, incomplete chance. It's completely annoying.
I don't think Bengals fans are as annoying. The Bengals fans are lower on the list than I think you might think.
Like, they're pretty bad, Drew.
Like, with Gold's experience of getting mooned by Ravens fans are jerks. The
Cowboys suck. I can't stand the Cowboys.
Cowboys fans also suck.
They're just living in the past, man. Yeah. The Dallas, see, as an Iowa fan, I also despise the University of Nebraska. Okay, Scott Parks and I, or our sister station KMBZ, we argue quite frequently because he's a Nebraska guy. I cannot stand the University of Nebraska the same way I can't stand the Dallas Cowboys because they haven't won a title in 30 years. The number of people I went to college with, man, that were Nebraska fans or they were Dallas Cowboys fans, are like, oh, well, how many Super Bowls do the Chiefs have? How many national championships does Iowa have? The same number as your team since we've been alive, jackass. I don't want to hear about a title you won 30 years ago. It's the same problem I have with Notre Dame fans. You haven't won anything in 60 years.
Yeah, Notre Dame fans are... It was weird. This past season was weird in college football because Notre Dame was almost, you almost wanted to root for Notre Dame a little bit.
I did.
Which just felt weird.
It felt against everything I stood for.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you feel that as an Indiana guy, I'm sure you had to deal with a bunch of Notre Dame people growing up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The fan base is something else. I mean, the IU fan base is something else as well, which is very annoying. But
I was actually rooting for them. That was short-lived.
For the Irish?
No, for the Hoosiers.
When was that?
Huh?
During the season?
You big Cignetti guy? Season, or do you mean like in general? Like a long time ago in the course or something?
It was fun. It was fun to see their turnaround.
Oh, okay. We'll see how they do this year. I think they'll be pretty good again.
Cignetti's got something. He's found something there. The problem for Indiana is going to be keeping him.
His for him to say in his press conference, Google me. I win. I mean, that's a flex. That's a mic drop flex. And then for them to go on and dang near make the playoff bank, yeah. The year that he said it after IU has been nothing but irrelevant in football.
They choked
other than the
stretch,
one year they had Penix after COVID was unbelievable.
Dude has never had a losing season. Not one. Started coaching at IUP.
Google him.
In 2011. His overall record as a head coach is 130-37.
Yeah, I think
it's insane.
He has there's certain coaches that do different things very, very well. Like Lance Leipold does a fabulous job rebuilding programs. Matt Rhule did a good job of that as well in college football. He's trying to do it at Nebraska. There are some coaches that no matter where they go, they just win games, and it's remarkable how they do it. And Kurt Cignetti is one of those guys.
I think this old moniker, too, of it's got to be an FBS guy, got to be the guy with experience. You've seen more and more guys step into it. I don't care about that. Were you a winner? Lance Leipold, 6 national titles, winner. Chris Klieman was a winner.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care Klieman's if you're FBS or whatever. Doesn't matter. Different levels, whatever, you're still a winner. I mean, that's who I'd go for.
Yeah. That's why Harbaugh has been able to do what he's done throughout his career, right? He won at Stanford. He won with the Niners. He won at Michigan.
Won at San Diego University.
Won at San Diego. He's winning again with the Chargers, you know. The only knock against Jim Harbaugh is that he can't win straight up. He's got to cheat in order to do it.
Connor well, it's all Stallions. Legal now.
Well, I mean, not what Connor Except Stallions did. Yeah.
Do we still know if that like actually? Because
I'm sure.
Do we know? Are we ever gonna really know?
No, we're never gonna really know. But in my heart of hearts, I know he cheated. The guy got in trouble like 9 times.
But the thing about it is, everybody scouts everybody. So this, as far as sign steals, this is an old adage. It's like the old Bounty Gate, New Orleans. People were like blown away when the Saints were busted for Bounty Gate, but everybody does it.
Yeah, the problem is always going to be when you bring the technological side into it. Sign stealing has been a part of sport since sport was invented, right? That's why the Astros got in so much trouble, because
then
they
brought
the technology into it, and they didn't. When everybody's sign stealing and it's just based off line of sight, that's a level playing field. When the technology is brought into it, that's when gets changed, right? Yep. That's why the Spygate thing with the Patriots was such a big deal. That's why the sign stealing and the trash can banging was such a big deal with the Astros, and why the sign stealing was such a big deal with the University
of Michigan. What always cracks me up is the paranoia. Especially, you know, the catchers coming out and talking to the pitcher, or the pitching coach with the glove in front of their face.
Yeah.
Or the hand. It's like, are really people going to give a damn about two crap teams in the eighth or ninth inning with the pitcher saying to the catcher? Like, some teams I get it that are, you know, legitimate, whatever, but when you see crap teams do it, it's like, man, no one's watching your stuff.
Now they're just used to it.
Like the White Sox, no one's watching your stuff, and no one cares what you're throwing.
Even in postgame, you see athletes go up and they're holding the towel up above their mouth that they don't want anybody.
It's like nobody cares. Like some teams, it just doesn't matter what you say. The White Sox could tell you exactly what they're doing, and you wouldn't give a damn.
No. Because you'd still beat them.
I mean, they can say what they're doing all they want to, but, do they actually do it? Like, hey, I'm going to throw a fastball upper right corner. Maybe it doesn't go to the upper right corner. If anything, you might rather not know what they're doing.
Keep them on their toes.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's like when the Patriots were filming the Bengals, and the Bengals were bad at the time.
On to Cincinnati. Didn't make sense.
Yeah, on to Cincinnati. Set in Kansas City. Coming next, though, we'll look at what's trending around the world of sports and how the NFL... the NHL might get it more than anybody else. We'll discuss that next.
What's trending?
What's trending is that Jack Caglione just hit another home run.
So he's got two now today?
He's got two today.
Omaha, let's go, man. Move him.
Three-hit game for Jack Caglione. Two long balls. A go-ahead three-run bomb in the seventh inning after he went to opposite field earlier in the day.
Double A can't contain him anymore, Drew Nixon.
Nope, they cannot.
Ooh-wee. Listen, we got to tamper the expectations down just a little bit, right? This is his 30th game, if that, in Double A. Even Bobby Witt Jr., as highly touted a prospect as he was, played 60 games in Double A before he got the call to Omaha, played 61 games in Triple A, and he was the Royals' opening day starter at shortstop the following year. I think you give him another month or so, right? Reevaluate in June what you want to do. Call him up to Triple A, where he can play June, July, August if you want to.
Oh,
and then next year, guy's an opening day starter.
I'd go ahead and do it, man.
I know.
Omaha,
I know you would.
Here you go.
I know you would, but
on up. Let's go.
I don't want to move the guy before he's ready. I don't.
Let's go. Anyway, this presented by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land jobs faster than any other university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu as far as what's trending. By the way, that's home of Mike McCarthy, Baker University. Probably their most esteemed alum. Mm-hmm. Starting off NASCAR week. NASCAR's coming to Kansas City, to Kansas Speedway. Drew's already seen a lot of the haulers start to make their way out to Kansas Speedway. Nice 1.5-mile track. It's a fun race to watch. It's more fun to go to. I don't know if you had a chance to go. If you're kind of on the fence and you can't find yourself watching NASCAR on TV, if you go, I definitely think you'll become a fan going forward. It's that much fun going out to a race.
It is. It's a good time. Just be fully prepared to not be able to speak for at least one quarter of it.
Bring some
of
your earbuds.
You have no idea how loud those cars are at 200 miles an hour when they come rolling past your quarter of the track. You can't hear yourself think when they go by. It's
unbelievable. I
remember
when Pat Warren, the Kansas Speedway president, let the guys, we were 6'10 at the time, but we went out and visited the Speedway. And he let all the guys drive their personal cars around the track. Every single one of them had their traction control. They had to go to dealership once they left.
Yeah, make sure to bring earplugs.
It's loud in there, man. What else is trending? The Florida Gators have reached a six-year, $40.5 million extension with head coach Todd Golden. That's fresh off of the Gators winning their third ever national championship.
That's why the SEC is America's conference.
I guess so. He becomes one of the five highest-paid coaches in college basketball history at just under $7 million annually, about 6.75, after leading them to a 36-4 record in his third season. He is 39 years old, became the youngest head coach since Jim Valvano in 1983 to lead his team to a national championship. So Florida keeping Todd Golden around for the long haul.
It's too bad Golden can't coach football.
Sorry?
It's too bad Golden can't coach football.
I think Billy Napier's doing a good job there.
Define good.
A whole lot better than Jim McElwain was, and they're winning games.
Well, okay.
They're winning games in the SEC.
That's true.
They're very competitive.
They're not winning national championships, and we know that in Gainesville, when it comes to Florida Gator football, if you're not winning national championships or competing for them,
you're going to be honest, Billy Napier's doing as good of a job as Brian Kelly is, and Brian Kelly's not anywhere close to the hot seat, but Billy Napier is.
That's Florida for you, man. I mean, Brian Kelly couldn't win with Jaden Daniels, quarterback, Brian Thomas, wide receiver, Malik Nabers.
That's what I'm saying. And I was down there when I was in Pensacola talking about the Gators and Seminoles when Billy Napier first came through there. And that was one of the big things is I think there's a lot more pressure on Billy Napier to try to fit. They want to be fixed, even if it's not to win a title. Obviously, they'd like that, but they want to be in the playoff, in the conversation. They haven't even been in the conversation. Over the last few years, they got maybe the best quarterback in all of college football, DJ Lagway.
And they had Graham Mertz, who was drafted by the Texans, as the Texans took three players from the Kansas City
area. Graham Mertz had some injuries still going the last couple of years.
The Royals, they've won 12 of the last 14. They've had five shutouts in the last 10 games. This team is on pace to have the best pitching staff ever in the organization. They get the White Sox. America's booty call for game two. You know what to do. They know what to do.
That's exactly what you want. Whether you're on a hot streak or you're struggling, the palate cleanser that is the Chicago White Sox and the Colorado Rockies are kind of a
slump buster.
Yeah. The Colorado Rockies got the ball rolling, I think, with this whole thing. And the Chicago White Sox will be a nice little end cap to this. They follow up. They got this four-game series, against Chicago and then Boston. Comes to town for three games over the weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So this will be a nice one. If they can win three out of four here, or maybe even sweep, you can get to 22-17 or even 23-16 when Boston comes to town. That's a nice little spot you're in, because I'm not sure you can sweep Boston. They've been pretty good to start the year, 18-18.
Phase two of the NFL officially began today. Phase one now over, down to phase two. Phase three is when they do the OTAs and the mandatory minicamp. That's actually more fun when that happens than phase two. But so far, so good with these rookies getting acclimated. Again, rookie minicamp, it's tough to take anything that happened because they're going against other fellow rookies and undrafted players that they signed with the team. But phase two does begin today.
This is important, right? And, you know, earlier we were talking about the NFL moving to an 18-game schedule and possibly getting rid of preseason games. That would make this part of the year even more important, right? The off-season and the preseason, yes, it's about getting guys back acclimated, getting them back up to game speed and whatnot. I think the most important part of the offseason is figuring out who's filling out the roster, right? 1 through 40 is typically pretty strong. You got that one kind of pinpointed as to who's who on this roster. The question becomes, who's 41 through 53? That's what the offseason's about. That's what rookie mini camp's about. That's what the rest of this is. And for the offseason, right, we're looking at a guy, a first-round pick in Josh Simmons. The Chiefs are taking their sweet time with him, as they should. You don't want to rush something like that. But if he can prove that he's physically healthy enough and ready to go, this is the time where Josh Simmons could prove he's a day one starter at left tackle, which could throw a massive wrench into what the Chiefs' plans are this year.
The one thing I like hearing from the rookies, and it's not about which damn barbecue restaurant they like, which the media loves that question. It's like, who's going to throw it out? Who's going to throw it out? What's your favorite barbecue? No, I hate that. But the expectations when you are a Chief, when you get drafted by the organization, you walk in the building, you start seeing the banners, and then old Mahomes says, hey, you need to go to work. That's what he's been telling these guys, like, go to work. I like hearing that because it's a different mindset of the organization.
Than it was 10 years ago, for sure.
It used to be Steelers like this. When they draft, they expect you to play. It's not the training wheels. The Patriots, they draft, they expect you to play. You come to Kansas City, this team's about winning.
Yes.
This team's not about, you know, hey, just go out and put a good effort. This isn't Cincinnati. I'm just kidding, Drew. Or Arizona or some of these teams. It's about go time with the Kansas City Chiefs. I love hearing that and expectations. Like, you just know when they put that helmet on, this team's about winning.
Yeah.
And forget about what you've done before. It's about learning this system and fitting in and making this team better for the Kansas City. I love hearing that. It's kind of like the Royals' attitude. Listen, I know in 14, they didn't really have anybody with playoff experience. It didn't really matter. They swept everything through until they get to the Giants in the World Series. But, like, didn't have much playoff experience. I mean, up and down, that team just did not, you know, have that kind of experience. But this year, they talked about, and Bobby Witt Jr. talked about it, you know, they've won.
Mm-hmm.
They made the playoffs. So, despite those 100-loss seasons, they've proven they can win.
Exactly.
And they expect to win going forward. But I love hearing that from the rookies when they come to Kansas City, because it's not vacation time here anymore.
No, not at all. Every team in every sport, right, whether it's the National Football League, whether it's Major League Baseball or the NBA, whatever it is, every team, or the majority of teams, I should say, hope to win. But there are a select few in every sport in every era that expect to win. And I think that is the biggest mindset shift for the Kansas City Chiefs, is they are no longer an organization that, even going back to the Alex Smith years, right, there was a hope to win. This was a team that expected to win games, but they didn't expect to win big games, I don't think, right?
They started winning the divisions with Alex Smith. They carried them to Mahomes.
And that's where we are now. The expectation is to win. And not only win, but to win at the highest level possible. The expectation isn't, you know, let's try to compete for the division. The expectation isn't, let's try to make the playoffs or let's try to win a playoff game. No, the expectation is, hey, we're going to host the AFC Championship game or we're going to a Super Bowl. That's where they are now. And that has been so much fun to watch, because for a long time, throughout most of my lifetime, it's just been hoping to win, right? The Trent Green, Priest Holmes, Larry Johnson, X-Factor Dante Hall years, right? They were good teams. They hoped to win. They won some games, but they never expected to win in those big-time moments in playoff
scenarios.
And this
team expects to beat every single guy they play,
yes,
which is huge. And
yes,
you got a coach that's number two all-time in wins in the postseason. And you've got a quarterback that's only behind Tom Brady as far as postseason wins.
And that's what the Royals are trying to create.
Yes,
right?
And that culture and attitude, when you step in here, it's different. It builds itself when you're coming to Kansas City. And they brought in Jake Brenningstuhl from Clemson. Andy Reid called.
Yeah.
And it makes a difference. Andy Reid calls or Patrick Mahomes texts you or whatever. That stuff makes a difference because it's the culture in Kansas City. These guys, for the most part, want to win. And that's important. I remember Kevin Wilcox, the head coach of Cal, came on with our draft special and said two types of players. Just two categories. Those that like being a football player and those that want to be a football player. Mm. Meaning, you know, you have all the accolades, you're a pro ball player and all that. And
yeah, they like
tells
the fame,
how good you
the
are.
Fame and fortune,
yeah,
and the accolades.
But the guys that actually come in
with it
and want to be good.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be good. And I'm noticing a lot with this team lately, too. And I don't know if you've noticed it, Logan, but I have. Like, the lack of, like, the Met Gala was last night, you know, where Joe Burrow looks all shiny and comes out of the car with some chicks and everybody's putting up. But the Chiefs aren't doing that. They've done it before. Like, I just haven't seen it. Like, you haven't noticed the commercials really
right,
with the Chiefs on them right now. I've seen Andy Reid more commercials than anybody with those Skechers. But that's it. I mean, Mahomes, you know, cut the hair. It's low profile. Kelsey, low profile. I kind of like this kind of hidden monster the Chiefs have become. They took it personally, what happened. And that's good, because they have, most teams, you know, bank on the fame, the commercials and all that. They've done all that. It is to the grindstone now. Like, I just haven't noticed it. Like, people all across the country get tired of all the Chiefs and all the commercials and all that. Well, that happens with success, but they've been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
They have kept an extremely low profile this offseason.
Yeah, I know it's a cliche, but I feel like the Chiefs' mantra, and at least the way that they're carrying themselves this offseason, is keeping the main thing, right? When you're on top of the world and you're a back-to-back defending Super Bowl champion, you go out and you do all these things and you're like, well, we're still winning, so what's the problem? And they're still winning, right? They lost one game. They lost the Super Bowl. They got to the Super Bowl, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, AFC
champions,
that's pretty good.
Yeah, but they didn't get the ultimate prize. And we know that with guys like Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes, Chris Jones, Andy Reid in this organization, the top guys that lead this club, nothing matters. The season's a failure unless you win the last one, because they've gotten a taste of what it's like to win the last one. In fact, they've done it three times in the last five seasons or six seasons. So to not have that gratifying feeling of being on the mountaintop again, to be knocked off of the mountaintop after holding on to that mantle for quite literally three consecutive seasons until the final few seconds of Super Bowl Sunday, it's a fall from grace. And I think that it's allowed those guys to reevaluate. I think that there's also, you know, factors that play into it. Travis Kelce is probably, this is it. This is his last season, right? I think most of us would assume that. A lot of people thought that he was going to retire this offseason, but he's not. He's going to come back. He's going to play one more year. And I think that he and Mahomes,
I think it might be different.
Had they won it, yes. But because they didn't, you're looking at it from a standpoint of Kelce realizes that this is kind of his last hurrah. And whether it was a spoken or unspoken agreement between those two guys and the rest of the organization, you got a first ballot Hall of Famer that might be playing his last year, and a guy who really laid the groundwork for the foundation of what the Kansas City Chiefs are today. I know we give a lot of credit to Mahomes, and rightfully so, but Travis Kelce's played a massive part in this as well. And the last thing that Kelce and Mahomes and Andy Reid and this Chiefs organization wants to do is not give everything they have to give Travis Kelce the best opportunity to win a Super Bowl on his way out and him be his absolute best version of himself here in his late 30s before he ultimately calls it a career and immortalizes himself in Canton.
There's something he said, Kelce said, after they lost to the Buccaneers, and I loved it. It's a mindset change with the organization. When he was asked, you know, if it's a success or not, and he flat out said no. Many times in the past, just getting to the Super Bowl, Chiefs would have loved it, right? But they'd already had the success. They'd already won. And then they got rolled by Tampa, and it left a bitter taste. So much so he said this.
Well, I mean, I took a note from the Bulls, when they were, you know, winning their championships and had their run, it don't mean a thing if you ain't got the ring, baby. And all those accolades, all that stuff, it might be cool when I'm sitting down on a couch watching the young guys try and chase the record, but right now, none of that really meant anything. And last year was a failure to me, to be honest. That's just what I have in my heart. This is the type of player I am, man. If we're not going out there winning Super Bowls, man, the season isn't a success.
See, I love that attitude because that just shows you a shift in the way this team, that was after the Tampa loss in the Super Bowl. So it tasted success. And he said, can't call it a success because we didn't win at all. See, I love that mindset. And you know they're carrying that mindset top to bottom in that roster, guys that have been here.
No question. And as long as 15's there, as long as Andy's leading the charge, that's going to continue to be the expectation for this team. And guys have bought in, not just guys within the organization or guys that they've drafted. Free agents have bought into that, right? I mean, Hollywood Brown taking the deal that he did last year on a one-year kind of prove-it situation.
Which everybody thought he was done.
Yeah.
Even Veach says, oh, we got him for 1 year.
Yeah.
Until he got hurt.
And he gets hurt, and he probably could have gone and got more money somewhere else. I mean, look at what guys like Curtis Samuel were getting in other places, right? I mean, Hollywood Brown probably could have made more money with another organization, but he decided to take a little bit of a pay cut and stay with Kansas City because that's where he wanted to be, right? Nick Bolton didn't really want to even entertain the idea of free agent conversations. Trey Smith didn't really want to entertain the idea of free agent conversations. Those guys want to stay here because they know they can win here. And that's the beauty of where this Chiefs team is compared to where it was even a decade ago when they were successful, but they weren't, if we don't win the last game of the year, it's a failure type of successful. That culture hadn't been established yet.
But I love when they had it. I remember when he said it after that Tampa loss. Yeah, it's one thing. It's not just, hey, we got there. We didn't win it. And I think that's important for this organization.
Yeah.
And I think a ring, hey, keep in mind too, you haven't really heard much from Mahomes. I mean, he's spoken at the dealer, but not a ton. And driven guys hate losing. The Jordans of the world, he didn't face it in NBA Finals, but certain guys have it and certain guys don't. Tiger Woods always hated when he didn't win a major.
And you hate it. Guys like that hate when they lose, and they especially hate it when they lose and didn't play well, right? Like Mahomes has lost games before, right? They lost the Super Bowl against Tampa, but Patrick Mahomes played pretty well in that game. I know you look at the box score and you're like, oh, he was this and that. He threw a ball parallel with the ground and hit Darrell Williams in the face mask and he dropped it. Mahomes was throwing the ball phenomenally.
The AFC title game to the Bengals. That pissed them off so much so they've been in the Super Bowl ever since.
Yes, but he played well in those sorts of games, right? This is maybe the first instance of its kind where Mahomes is coming off of a loss that stings in this fashion, and he didn't play well. That might have been the worst start of Patrick Mahomes' career. And so this offseason, I think he's stewing in that a little bit of he didn't play well enough for them to win a game. The Chiefs have lost plenty of football games when Mahomes still played well enough to win and they just came up short.
Yeah, it's one thing for all the fans to be watching NFL Network or ESPN when they're crapping on your team left and right. It's another thing to play for that team.
Yeah.
Because that even motivates you that much more. Oh, I did want to talk about the NHL real quick before it's not about the hockey in itself. But the NHL is planning to do, they scrapped the All-Star game again. So they did the the tournament this past year where they had the four going, you know, different countries going.
It was face off or whatever it was called.
Yeah, Four Nations face off. A huge success. It was a huge success. People were watching it, enjoying it. But they had a regular All-Star game scheduled. Now, they didn't do it this year because they're, you know, preluding to when the NHL players will be in the World Cup coming up. And then in the future Olympics, the NHL players will be in. But they had an All-Star game. That was the All-Star game from last year, which actually was much better because it was the best of the best playing for the countries, which was awesome. So they said, hey, next year, we're going to do the same thing. Because they actually had an All-Star game plan. They scrapped it. And it was supposed to be where the Islanders play. They were going to have the All-Star game there. But they scrapped it for a, quote, international event. So we don't know what it's going to be, a Four Nations face-off. It might be something completely different. But I think it's cool because what the NHL said, hey, this was popular. Let's scrap whatever we're doing, and we'll do the most popular. And nothing against the NFL because everything they do turns to gold. But the Pro Bowl sucks.
Yes.
And the NBA All-Star game sucks.
Yes.
But the NHL All-Star game, basically, it was this way. They had the tournaments between different teams, the three-on-three and stuff like that. But at least they realize who and what they are and say, let's do something different. And so they're doing another international event next year. It hadn't been determined what exactly they're going to do, but they saw success in it, and they're willing to jettison what they previously were doing to do something popular that fans like. This is smart by the NHL doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. If there's one thing that will motivate a player to play hard outside of money or for the organization that they represent, it's their country or their whatever it is, right? And the NHL has found that here. The NFL, I don't know what they can do because
they still get ratings and stuff, but nobody plays it. It's a
right.
joke.
The NFL is
flag football. Come on.
The NFL is dominated by the United States. They don't have a ton of international players, right? And so you couldn't really go about it in this unless you wanted to break it up by, like, you know, you've got your South, you've got your Midwest, your Northeast, and your West Coast, and you wanted to do it in that fashion,
I guess.
These
guys don't play in it. I get right. it. It's got to the point. Football's just changed.
I think the NBA could absolutely take this formula and press it forward. I mean, that is the most international sport of any of the professional sports we see. Even the NHL, as international as it is still dominated by the big three of the United States, Canada, and Russia. It's dominated by those three for the most part, or the Baltics.
I just like when other sports realize you're not the NFL.
Right.
Forget about it. Stop trying to be the NFL.
Yes.
I know Major League Baseball has changed their draft now. They do it around the All-Star game. They've tried to do things better. I think they're still behind the eight ball, though, by starting games in Japan at 6 o'clock in the morning with spring training still going on with other teams. I thought that was dumb.
Yeah, yeah.
But at least the NHL realizes who and what they are, and you're not going to compete against the NHL. Don't try. Just try to be different.
Try to be different. The NBA could do something similar where they're trying to go about it from, you know, break it up by continents. You've got North America versus South America versus Asia versus Europe. I don't know how you do it because you've got six continents represented, so that would be difficult too, along with how great Australia's become. But there's something that they can do there outside of the All-Star game, which no matter what they've tried, it hasn't worked.
Good stuff, Logan Weber. We'll talk to you tomorrow, my friend.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Drew Nixon. It actually was kind of fun working with you. I didn't think it would be, but it was again, so I appreciate it. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Carrington Harrison, The Drive, next.